Welcome to Nature Finds a Way, a pop culture biology podcast where we nerd out about biology facts and fiction from some of our favorite books, movies, and TV shows.
I'm Lindsay and she's Sarah, and we're two marine biologists in recovery, and today we are talking about Frankenstein.
Oh yeah. So, this was meant to be our Halloween episode.
And then
life kind of exploded. And also we realized it's less Halloween-y than pop culture would
have
you think. It's much more about philosophy and ethics than horror.
Than spookiness. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just going to say up front, when I was reading this novel, I hated it. I knew that in order for it to be around for so long, it had to have some kind of meaning and resonance with stuff, so I really enjoyed doing the research into it and Mary Shelley and finding out some of that. It makes it much better. But I still think that Victor Frankenstein is a giant dickhead.
True fact.
And I hate him.
True fact. I think, though, to be fair, not to him as a person, but to the legacy of the book, it was written... First of all, she was really young. And also, the reason it has lasted is not because he's a good character, is because it has stuff to say about important things.
Yes, which is then also ironic considering what we think of it as a pop culture.
Yes.
Because if you think about what you know as Frankenstein from pop culture, it's nothing to do with
none
what
of it's in the book. Yeah.
Which is very, very strange.
Yeah.
So, I didn't actually write down when it was written.
It was written in the 1800s.
Yes. And we're not going to do a synopsis because it's long AF.
Yeah.
And I don't want to.
Yeah.
But suffice it to say, Igor does not appear in it.
Nope.
He's not a character. We don't really know how the monster is created. Not with electricity, as aforementioned. And the words, it's alive, are never mentioned.
No. In the book, everything is sort of, it's told in, like, looking back on it. It's like somebody's telling a story to somebody else. Like, at one point, it's like you're hearing about things beforehand.
Ugh.
Yeah. Which is kind of annoying. But, yeah, so basically Frankenstein is a scientist, and he decides that he wants to figure out how things are alive, or how to make things that aren't alive become alive.
Yeah. But
yet
he's trying to study chemistry, which doesn't make any sense
to me. Science. Mm-hmm. And then he does it, and then he freaks out and then has a mental breakdown. And then, because of its abandonment, the creature that he creates is really mad and really upset and really sad.
Yeah, but not for a really long time.
No, it takes a really long time.
And that's one of the things that I was expecting was sympathy for the creation. Like, sympathy for, like, they talk a lot about this in the, actually in the commentary of Fellowship of the Ring with the cave troll, of like, it's not the cave troll's fault.
No.
It's just who he is, and he doesn't really have any controls.
Yeah, same, no, the monster.
Yeah, for especially the first three quarters of the book, the monster
is super sympathetic.
And like, he's just a sad guy who's ugly and can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And everyone just runs away from him. So it's really kind of sad. And then he does turn evil in the end, but I also am on board with his choices.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Like, he didn't have skills to make other choices.
No. Except he did have some amazing skills. From being able to learn
everything. English and everything. Yeah, so I'd read this book in university, but as I was just telling Lindsay, I read it in a really, like, hard semester, the 300-level English class that I didn't need to take, and I don't know why I took it. I don't know why, because I could take it by distance ed is why I took it, and I needed credits. And in a three-month period, we read this novel and, like, 8 to 10 other ones, so I probably read it in, like, a day and a half.
Yeah.
So I didn't remember much of it other than it had things to say and it talked about science.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. But very vaguely.
Very vaguely.
But also, science in the 1800s was
also vague.
Vague and not very science-y.
Yeah, and I don't know how much she would know about science. They talk a lot on her Wikipedia page about how her husband helped
Yeah. No, but she was, like, even before she was married, she was raised in a house that, for the time, was very progressive in terms of educating girls, and they had, like, scientists around, like, because mm-hmm. they were sort of an educated family, so she was pretty well educated and relatively scientifically literate for the time, like, yeah. more so than you would assume for, like, a 16-year-old girl in yeah. the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, and it doesn't go into a lot of detail on a lot of the science. Like,
no.
The science of creating the monster, there's very little detail, so
it's yeah. not... Like, people always talk about this as, like, the original science fiction book, and, like, I guess that's kind of true, because the whole thing with science fiction is that you take fictional science and pretend that it's true,
mm-hmm.
which this book totally does.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't go into, you know, it doesn't pretend that it's magic or, like, fantasy that created it. It's just he managed to find the right combination of
whatever
science-y bits.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's sort of a little bit left up to the reader to fill in the gaps. But also, the science isn't the point, it turns out, of the book.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of talk about different scientists at the beginning, mm-hmm. and in the 18th century, they are, or I guess in the 19th century, she's writing it, but the book is based in the 18th century.
Yeah.
And those scientists are considered to be crackpots, basically. Yeah. But that's probably just because they didn't agree to the generic norms and stuff.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk a bit about Agrippa?
Well, I didn't really look it up. All I knew is that that was, he has a Chama frog card.
Yeah. So, Agrippa, like, in pop culture, Agrippa is thought to, you know, be, in retrospective, more of a wizard than a scientist.
Which is why he has a Chama frog card.
Mm-hmm. And then the other guy was Paracelsus, who I looked up a bit, because I was like, oh, I know who Agrippa is. Who's this Paracelsus guy? And, like, total crackpot, but also, like, thought that people practicing medicine should understand science. And, you know, thought that, they're, like, scientists, which in the 1700s, well, actually, he was in the 1500s, even worse then, scientists were, like, sort of more like magicians, and they were very wealthy people who had the leisure time to kind of just poke stuff and
mm-hmm.
try not to blow themselves up or eat too much mercury.
Yeah. Well, that didn't go away in the 1500s.
No. That was
a long, long time.
Yeah, no, until like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he thought that, like, he taught science to people more that who were more than that. Like, he taught people, taught science to people, you know, like the barbers at the time who were, you know, basically did more than cut your hair. They, you know, mm-hmm. pulled your teeth and did all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, so as much as, you know, he thought that disease came from humors, he also realized that disease, you caught it by coming into contact with somebody who had a disease, not mm-hmm. just, like,
from magic.
Spontaneously.
Yeah.
So, he was a crackpot, but he was on the right track on some things. So mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't think they would have necessarily known that when she was writing the book.
No, definitely
so
not.
He would have been a crackpot. 100% mm-hmm. back then. So.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows? All right. What is next?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the monster. I don't want to rant too much about Victor Frankenstein, mm-hmm. Although all I could think was, while I was reading this book, was our tagline.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you spend so much time, because he spends 2 years making the monster, and he's like, you never... You just try to see if you could. You never stop to see if you should.
Yeah.
And then, like, literally the second after uh-huh. he makes the monster, he's like, oh, fuck, what have I done? And, like, abandons it and runs away.
Yeah, well, and then, like, conveniently has a mental breakdown so that he doesn't have to deal with the responsibility of his life.
Which is how the book continues. He has mental breakdowns constantly.
Yeah.
And he also can't kill the monster in any... point, and, like, is that because of his mental state,
mm-hmm.
or is it because he's a rich little white sissy boy? I'm sorry, I really don't like him.
No, but he's a terrible character.
But I'm like, why can't you kill this dude? Like,
yeah.
they literally spend a day on a mountain together while the monster is telling him his crazy story about how he learned English from these people.
Yeah.
And he doesn't kill him. I'm like, come on, dude, like, you have to, like, there has to be a rock somewhere or something.
Yeah, well, the monster is stronger and taller.
I know, but he didn't even try.
I know, he didn't try. That's the thing that's, like, it didn't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
From a biology question standpoint, mm-hmm. I have many questions of where did he get the material to make the monster?
Well, so scientists back then used to, like, because nobody donated their bodies to science, so you get body parts. Like, great, like, scientists were often grave robbers.
Yeah.
They would get, like, dead criminals' bodies, so.
Yeah, so how did they stay fresh?
Exactly, that's, yeah.
That's the big thing. And then, the monster talks about waking up and grabbing clothes to cover himself, but then later it's for warmth, but that made me think, I'm like, does he have genitalia? Like, why?
Well, it depends, like, how, I don't know how many different body parts he was made up of, right? Like,
yeah, it didn't really say.
Yeah.
So, and then later, when the monster is asking Frankenstein to make him a partner.
Yeah.
And then he agrees, and then he goes on this whole other mental breakdown about what if they do and what if they reproduce. And I'm like, do you know where babies come from?
No.
That was, does he have genitalia? Would she have genitalia?
Yeah.
You don't know how babies are made.
No.
Which makes sense because he's a little rich boy in the 1700s.
Yeah.
So why would he?
Yeah.
But it's just like...
Yeah. Well, so one of the people that would come to Mary Shelley's parents' house was Erasmus Darwin, who was Charles Darwin's grandfather?
No idea.
Father or grandfather, I can't remember. And he, was, like, he would, have, like, water and then talk about it, like, spontaneously becoming alive because there was, like, microscopic stuff in it, right? So, like, I think there was a thought that sort of life just kind of spontaneously
happens.
Yeah. And so when a man and a woman are in love, it just spontaneously happens.
Yeah. There's just so many questions.
So yeah.
It's about that and just and then like this monster is giant and really, really strong, but he can sustain on by living on nuts.
Yeah.
Which makes absolutely no sense.
Well, if he's mostly dead and he's not trying to grow.
True.
Slow metabolism. But he does
like spend every night chopping wood.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but like he's got a slow metabolism.
But why, how does he even have him?
I don't know.
Anyway, there was just so many, like, actual biology questions about this monster and how it exists.
No, the biology of the monster is problematic.
Yes.
Did you ever do the thing, I know he didn't explicitly get generated through electricity, but did you ever do the thing in physiology where you hook the, like, frog muscles up to...
No, we didn't, because my physiologist professor was obsessed with physics, which makes sense, because it's like, your entire body's a circuit. And I'm like, okay. So, like, our first midterm was circuits. Like, I'm in a third year biology course.
I forgot all my
physics. I don't need Ohm's Law.
Yeah, crazy. I didn't either, because I took environmental physiology rather than actual physiology. Yeah, but yeah, like, I know friends that did it, and so, like, you would just get a chunk of frog muscle. With, like, you know, like a quarter of a frog, basically, like a frog leg, and then you hook the electrodes up in the right place, and then it twitches. It's like,
Which, you know, makes total sense.
Yeah.
Your body is a circuit. It just needs a complete pathway.
Yeah.
And power source.
So, but, like, just because it twitches doesn't mean it's alive, FYI. Yeah.
Anyway. It's,
yeah, like, you know, when chickens running around with their heads cut off, and just, like... Only a little bit apocryphal. Like, they twitch. I don't think they actually run around.
Yep.
I don't know if you ever cut a head off a chicken.
Nope, me neither. I don't, that's not how I kill my chickens.
No. No, I've never killed a chicken. I've killed lots of fish.
Me neither, but I know how.
Now you have to share how you kill a chicken.
Wow, we have tangented. Uh-huh. Anyway, the CO2?
CO.
Carbon monoxide that keeps the heads of bulbkelp afloat, which is the bulbous part where the leaves attach. There's enough in one of those bulbs to kill a chicken. Maybe. It's one of our favorite facts.
It's a very good fact.
Super random.
It's a very good fact.
Anyway.
Frankenstein. Yes.
Like, I'm really intrigued to watch one of the movies, although I don't really want to. But yeah. I'm interested to see what they do. Like, I looked at some of the stuff, and yeah, the Mary Shelley Frankenstein with Brana and Robert De Niro says it's a faithful adaptation, but even from the pictures, I could see that it wasn't, not only did the poster have the words "It's Alive" on it and a bunch of electricity, it, all the other pictures are just Kenneth Branagh and Helena Bonham Carter having sex. Like, I know.
Who's Helena Bonham Carter play?
I assume Elizabeth.
Okay.
Robert De Niro, I like the makeup they did for the monster, looks good.
That's good.
But that's all I saw. Yeah. And I didn't see if there was an Igor in that one.
Yeah. See, I would like the story from the monster's perspective.
Yes.
Way more interesting than the third-hand perspective of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Until it got super long and totally unrealistic, more than, it, you know, I really enjoyed how he came to life, found stuff, like, actually how he learned English, like, it was completely ridiculous, and then the part where he, like,
it wouldn't have been English, but...
Yeah, whatever, learned how to speak and read, but then the parts where he, like, then could tell this entire story from, about somebody else.
Yeah.
This is weird life with Turkey, and now they got married, like, oh, why?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I was trying to figure out why that was in the thing, and I think it was to show... that, like, he was able to pick up culture, like, that culture was an innate thing, and, like, and, like, sort of the decorum and norms and mores of a culture were something that he innately understood rather than a thing that is taught. So I think, like, that, in terms of, like, what it's saying that, like, you know, that sort of innate want to be a part of a culture and to belong and to understand and, like, to relate to people around you, like, that's an innate thing, not a learned thing.
Yeah. And then, of course, to have them completely reject him.
Yes. Yeah, so it makes it worse.
It makes him, his feelings worse, and also gives him motivation to
start to
turn evil. But in that way, he found the soul story, he somehow read Paradise Lost.
Yeah. And then conveniently had the diary of Frankenstein in the pocket of the lab coat. Thank goodness for that.
Yep. And also, like, later, when we're back on the boat in the Arctic, Frankenstein has the letter from Felix and Safi, who are the people that, like, how does that even make sense?
It's so weird. It's so weird. This book, yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see there being a good adaptation out there that I think would be worth watching, but I don't know which one it is.
Yeah.
And I don't want to watch the bad ones.
And it's interesting because, like, would anyone even make a good adaptation now, because the world would turn it down and be like, what's this? This isn't Frankenstein.
Yeah, like, where's Igor?
Where's Igor? Like, nobody says it's alive. Like, so is there a purpose?
But... Yeah, it's funny. There's so many weird adaptations, and, like, I mean, there's always, like, the main misconception that Frankenstein is the monster.
Which is, been happening forever, and that's is what it is. But, like, it was even looking up the Daniel Radcliffe James McAvoy one, which is called Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But it's based on Igor's perspective. I'm like, okay, so this is just completely just nothing.
Yeah. Well, and then I was like, is Igor meant to be...
Henry? That's what I was expecting him to, like, somehow turn into him, but then the monster is meant
to be the person writing the letter to the sister? I had no idea.
I had no idea either. Okay, I would need to look up what Igor does, aside from just be the ridiculous hunchback assistant.
Well, and I probably, in terms of, like, turning this book... that is written sort of in the, what's it called when you write a book?
Oh, the crazy E word. Epistolary?
No. Epistolary.
Epistolary?
I wanted to say Episcopalian, which is not the right word.
Yeah, so this is technically all epistolary.
Epistolary, so it's, like, in the form of letters, so that's not really, like, a good movie. So then you need a character to, like, have conversations with.
Yeah, exposition.
So, like, I can totally see why they ended up making... a character.
Yeah, but it wasn't until the sequel, which is also weird. So, like, what is the first one like?
Yeah.
I don't even know. And then, I think the 1930s one was the first one with Boris Karloff, and then there was, like, four. And then it just went from there. So, and then it was, like, all of the stuff, like, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, and then there's Young Frankenstein, and, which actually, probably Young Frankenstein is, like, the most
popular one. Yeah, no, those are, like, watching. I'll watch that.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, so ridiculous. Oh man. Yeah. I wanted it to be more science-y, but I get why it wasn't.
Yeah, I get what it's trying to do, which we haven't actually talked about. There's a lot of stuff about Mary Shelley and how she's actually, with her other books as well, she's actually quite a good feminist, and that's not just saying that because she's a novelist who was published under her own name.
Yeah, which I wasn't even sure about.
Well, was it? She was published anonymously at the beginning.
Right.
And then they figured it out. I don't remember how. Anyway, so there's a lot of stuff. She had gave birth to a 2-month early premature baby, and because of that, her husband ran away and had an affair with her stepsister, which is kind of like a word analogy, metaphor. One of those of creating something horrific and running away from your responsibilities for
it. Oh, yeah, so like her husband is Victor Frankenstein. Like they made this baby together and then it didn't work out and he ran away.
And it was a lot of like stuff of that. So like she's failing as a parent and also being the cause of death. Like her mother also died.
Childbirth. Yeah, or when she was very young.
I don't remember. Yeah, very young. So something like all of those things of like, I'm the cause of this death, both as a parent as a daughter. All of that kind of stuff. And then from, as people studied it more and thought of her more as a feminist, and that became a thing.
Yeah.
It was talking a lot about, this book is when a man tries to have a baby without a woman.
Right.
Which it was, when I read that, I was like, okay, I'm glad that I read this.
Yeah, like you have a little bit more understanding of where she's coming from.
Where she's coming from, and it makes me feel good as a feminist. And I'm like, this doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in terms of thinking about it as, like, a precursor to modern science fiction, like, science fiction is usually used not to necessarily tell stories about how the science works, but as, like, a metaphor for, like, conveying our fears of how like, science in the world is developing, or to, you know, like, take things to extremes. So, like, if this thing that we're doing now goes down, like, this really, really long rabbit hole, like, how might it end up, sort of, like, imagining that. And so I think, like, you know, people were just starting to figure out electricity, and, like, nobody really knew what it did, and people were just trying to figure out, like, other, like, how chemistry works, and how, like, blood and all these different things in bodies work. And so it's like, well, if we keep going down, like, all this figuring out, maybe we'll get to a point where we can figure that out.
Yeah.
And probably it'll be terrible.
Yeah. Which didn't really work out so far, but that's how you, if you look at science fiction, still.
Yes, that's still exactly what people do. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast about Star Trek today, as I do, and they were talking about how, like, Star Trek's one of the only science fiction shows, or, like, popular culture science fiction that actually is, like, imagines the future and, for the most part, imagines it better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everything else is kind of, like,
yeah,
less better.
We were just talking about that. Matt and I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
It's not super great.
Not super great.
Well, it's science fiction.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's doing a thing. It's, like, helping us explore, you know, culture and science and ethics and philosophy and stuff without having to, like, call out certain things, or, like, you know, like in the original series of Star Trek in the 60s, obviously racism, and that was a big deal. And so there's a really famous episode where these two cultures on a planet are at war, and, like, one side, their left sides of their face are white and the other sides are black, and the other group is, like, mirror image, and they're, like, at war, and, like, how, you know, so all, like, all the Star Trek people can, like, talk about how, you know, like, racism and blah, 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 without having to talk about, like, black people and white people in America in the 60s.
Yeah.
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 And, you know, not get put on television.
Exactly.
So, yay, science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently this episode of our podcast is more about science fiction than the actual book.
Well, there wasn't a lot of biology in it.
No.
So, then all the biology is wrong, also, if we're going to go for a basic review of what our podcast is.
Yeah. Pretty bad. Pretty bad, pretty vague.
Yeah. So, in conclusion, maybe watch Frankenstein and let us know how it is.
Yeah, or if you have a favorite adaptation of Frankenstein, let us know. Do you know if there's a biopic of Mary Shelley? Because I feel like
that would be interesting. There is. It's Julia Roberts.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it's not good.
I never saw it. I don't know why I know that, but I would assume it's 90s because that's
Julia Roberts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. That would be more interesting than.
Yeah. Like, there's. I'm very interested in lots of these, but also I'm interested in reading other things, like the other classic things that I thought I know about, like Dracula.
Yeah.
Or I don't even know. That's the first one that came to mind because it's Halloween, or it was.
It was. Yeah. I don't know.
But like, there's.
I'd say Moby Dick, but I'm not reading Moby Dick.
No, me neither.
Sorry.
Too bad. Not happening.
Nope.
I support Moby Dick the best way I know how.
Lindsay pointed at our Starbucks coffee. I like Starbucks in Battlestar Galactica.
I know you do.
Way better. Yeah, I don't know what other like classic things are out there that. Would be good to do for this.
I don't know, like 2000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, or.
Yeah, like, yeah, Jules Verne, or H.G. Wells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Isaac Asimov.
I've never read any of that.
Yeah.
Do a little classic sci-fi, see what.
Yeah, science. See what comes through. But first, we're doing Christmas.
We're doing many Christmas. Probably our next, like, at least two episodes will be Christmas.
Definitely. Because you can't stop us.
Nope. You cannot.
Yeah.
You cannot. And yeah.
Anyway,
to learn more about our podcast, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Nature Finds a Pod. You can subscribe to our podcast by searching for Nature Finds a Podcast. Nature Finds a Way on your podcast app. And we have a website, which is naturefindsapodcast.com.
We will be at PodCon at the end of January.
We will. It's in Seattle. You should come. It's going to be great. I got the email that my tickets are ready.
I got one, too. Very exciting. Yay, yay. Yeah. I just wanted to say that Daylight Savings was a couple days ago, so don't get the sad.
Yeah.
Take your vitamin D.
Take your vitamin D. Go for a walk at lunchtime, if it's, you know, if you weather can. Appropriate.
Yeah. Don't get the sad.
Don't get the sad. Yay, sunshine. All right, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.